Hello friends, welcome once again to V School. We are on chapter 2. As I said before, in this chapter we are going to cover various GST acts. We have already seen there are 5 components of GST: the CGST, the SGST, the IGST, the UTGST, and the Compensation to States Act. So what is the learning objective of chapter 2? The learning objectives of chapter 2 would be to understand brief definitions and terms and concepts of this GST Act so that it becomes very easy for understanding the provisions in the GST Act. Next, we move on to the concepts of aggregate turnover, because we have seen the threshold limit would be the criteria on which the GST would be levied, and hence it is very important for us to understand the concept of aggregate turnover, agent, and various other definitions which is going to help to implement the GST provisions as well as comply with the GST provisions. Next important would be the time of supply and the place of supply. Two important parameters for understanding whether the GST would be leviable or not and at what rate the GST would be levied. Next important learning from this chapter would be input tax credit and reverse charge. Reverse charge, we are going to see many provisions in this chapter. And finally, the location of suppliers as well as the recipient of service. This will help us to establish at what basis the GST would be levied when it comes to location of suppliers and the recipient of services. So once again, from our unit number 1, GST is a dual concept tax system. When we talk about dual concept, it means it is GST shared by both central and state governments. Basis on the nature of transaction, that is it within the state, which we call it as the intrastate, or it is from one state to another, which we call it as the interstate. CGST and SGST is levied on transactions of supply of goods and services within the state. IGST is levied on transactions between two states. So these are the basic concepts related with the dual concept GST tax system. As I already told you, the various components of GST, starting from CGST, which is the central GST, application on supplies within the state, SGST, that is the state GST, applicable on supplies within the state. Both CGST and SGST are applied simultaneously on intrastate transactions. IGST, integrated GST, which is applicable on interstate as well as the import, sale, supply transactions. Now let us look at the first act, that is the Central Goods and Service Tax Act 2017. What is the main objective of CGST Act? The main objective of CGST Act is to make a provision for levy and collection of tax on intrastate supply of goods or services, or both, by the central government. So CGST provides the power to levy GST to the central government on intrastate supply of goods or services, or both. Now let us look into the salient features of CGST Act 2017. The first salient feature would be: every supplier shall be liable to be registered in the state or union territory other than the specialized category states from where he makes supply of goods or services, or both, if his aggregate turnover in the financial year exceeds rupees 20 lakhs. In case of a person who is engaged in exclusive supply of goods, the limit of 20 lakhs has been increased to 40 lakhs with effect from 1st of April 2019. In case of special category states like Tripura, Nagaland, Uttarakhand, Sikkim, Himachal Pradesh, Arunachal Pradesh, Assam, Manipur, Meghalaya, Mizoram, and Jammu and Kashmir, registration is required if his aggregate turnover exceeds rupees 10 lakhs. So only for this special category states, aggregate turnover limit is, threshold limit is 10 lakhs, whereas for others, as we saw, it would be 20 lakhs, 40 lakhs, based on the criteria. The third salient feature is a business entity with turnover up to rupees 150 lakhs can avail the benefit of composition scheme, under which it has to pay a much lower rate, a flat rate, and has to fulfill very minimal compliance requirements. ITC would be admissible on all goods and services used in the course or furtherance of business. A taxpayer can use the CGST or SGST input tax credit for payments of IGST in the unit number 1. We have already seen the order of adjusting the ITC towards the CGST, IGST, IGST as the case may be. Next important salient feature of CGST Act is such payments are to be made in a predefined order. ITC of SGST can be used for payment of SGST first. If there is any balance, it can be paid for IGST. Now, once again, we have to remember this. SGST, ITC of IGST cannot be paid for CGST, and likewise, ITC of CGST cannot be paid for SGST. So, vice versa, CGST to ICST, SGST to ICST, CGST to SGST, and SGST to CGST is not permissible. Now, the next important point is ITC of CGST can be used for the payment of CGST first and the balance for payment of IGST on outward supply. Likewise, ITC of IGST can be used for payment of IGST first and the remaining balance can be utilized for CGST, SGST in that order only. Next important features of CGST Act 2017 is the liability to pay CGST in relation to the supply of goods and services. Note this very carefully. It will arise on the date of issue of invoice or receipt of payment, whichever is earlier. We have seen an example of this in unit number 1. So it doesn't matter which arises, whether it's issue of notice or payment before issue of invoice, whichever is earlier, the liability to pay CGST will arise from that date. Every taxpayer shall be assigned a GST compliance rating score based on his record of compliance. So there will be a categorization based on how well the compliance is done by the taxpayer. Next important feature is any taxpayer may apply for refund of tax in cases including payment of taxes in excess or unutilized input tax credit. So no one has to pay extra for what he was not liable for, leviable for. So if at all there is any excess tax paid, he can claim a refund, as well as he can go for asking unutilized input tax credit. So after considering such salient features, let us go into more salient features. Like every taxpayer would have to self-assess and file tax returns on a monthly basis. What is self-assessment? What is assessment made by the tax authorities? We are going to understand in more detail in a separate chapter, assessments and returns. But for the time being, one has to understand that self-assessment and return filing has to be done on a monthly basis by every taxpayer. In addition to the monthly returns, an annual return will also be filed by each taxpayer. The commissioner is empowered to permit the taxpayer to pay GST in installments. So some of the suppliers would like to have this facility of paying GST in installments. Only the commissioner is empowered to permit the taxpayers to pay GST in installments to mitigate the financial hardships suffered by the taxpayer. So this is all we cover in the CGST Act 2017. Now let us look into more details about SGST Act 2017. As we have seen in unit number 1, SGST Act has to be enacted by every state. And Telangana is the first state to pass the GST bill. Of course, other state also followed soon, but Telangana gets the credit of being the first state to pass the GST bill. The SGST Act of each state is virtually a copy of CGST Act. So, same provisions based on applicability of CGST Act are applicated in the SGST Act with certain modifications suiting the states. The third important act is UTGST Act, specifically for Union Territories of India. The Union Territory Goods and Service Tax Act, or the bill which was first proposed, 2017, provides for the levy of Union Territories Goods and Service Tax. The center will levy the UTGST on the supply of goods and services within the boundary of a Union Territory. So we have specific acts for the central government, for the state government, as well as for the Union Territories. The next important act is the IGST Act. The Integrated Goods and Service Tax Bill provides for the levy of Integrated Goods and Service Tax, that is IGST, by the center on interstate supply of goods and service. We have already seen interstate means supply of goods and or services from one state to another. The center will levy IGST in the case of interstate supply of goods and services, imports and exports, and supply to and from special economic zones, which we call it as the SEZs. So IGST will be applicable on these three type of transactions. IGST will be levied on any supply which is not falling under the purview of central and state GST acts. So there won't be any transaction on which no GST would be leviable. If anything is not covered under central and state GST, IGST provisions will be attracted. The IGST revenue collected by the center will be apportioned between the center and to the state where the supply of goods and services was received. IGST rate is the double of CGST rate and will be uniform all over India. When we say double of CGST rate, whatever if the IGST rate is 12%, the half of it would be CGST, half of it would be SGST. Now, to understand these acts, we have to understand the meanings and definitions of certain terms that are used in the acts. Let us understand the meaning of taxable event, because taxable event is a basis on which the GST is leviable. So taxable event under GST law is supply of goods or services or both, which clearly means if there is no supply, no GST is leviable. So taxable event will happen once the supply of goods or services or both happen. If there is no supply, no GST. What is the meaning and scope of supply? Supply of anything other than goods and services does not attract GST. So, goods and services supply will attract GST. Supply of anything other than goods and GST does not attract GST. This concept of supply has to be clearly put into the mind. Supply should be made for a consideration, because whenever a transaction of supply happens, there has to be a consideration. supply should be made in the course or furtherance of a business. This again is a very important requirement for a supply to be considered under GST. Supply should be made by a taxable person, and hence the taxable person requires registration under the GST laws. Supply should be a taxable supply. So we have seen on, and we are also going to see which are the items that are taxable, which are the items that are not taxable, which are the items that are neither considered as goods or supplies. So there are separate schedules which are mentioning these goods and services under those categories. Supply should be made within the taxable territory. As we have seen, goods and service tax is enacted in India, and hence the supply should be made within the taxable territory, specifically in India. Electronic cash ledger, as I said in the unit number one, right from application for registration till the payment of GST, till the filing of returns and assessment, everything happens electronically on the GST portal. So when it comes to payment of tax or GST, there has to be some electronic purse or ledger from which the transactions happen. So certain ledgers or electronic sort of wallet is created under GST acts or GST provisions from which the transactions of money can happen. The first such thing is electronic cash ledger. A cash ledger maintained in the electronic form by each registered person. So every registered person has to maintain an electronic cash ledger. The amount can be deposited through internet banking, NEFT, RTGS, and whatever amount that is credited in the electronic cash ledger can be used for payment of tax or interest, penalty fees, etc. So you park some amount, and amount that is credited in electronic cash ledger can be utilized for payment of tax, interest, penalty, etc. So electronic cash ledger is the first type of some sort of parking of money made. Now let us look a similar ledger, but we call it as electronic credit ledger. Why electronic credit ledger and who maintains it? Electronic credit ledger is maintained by each registered person who is eligible for input tax credit. So we have seen input tax credit is provided for the suppliers when he is paying tax, and whenever he passes on that goods to another, the tax would be actually recovered from the next consumer or the distributor, and the previous in the chain, he gets a credit, which is input tax credit. Every claim of input tax credit shall be credited to electronic credit ledger, and whatever amount that is credited, it can be utilized for discharging of any liability. So note down these two ledgers, electronic cash ledger and electronic credit ledger. Both are useful for doing transactions for GST provisions. The next important understanding should be the tax invoice, because this tax invoice establishes the supply, the details of the supply. It evidences the supply of goods and services, and it's a very important document for the recipient to avail the input tax credit, because this invoice is clearly going to mention the value of goods and service as well as the GST paid on it, and hence this evidence has to be actually kept with the recipient of goods and services as well as the supplier. Aggregate turnover. Up till now we have seen aggregate turnover includes various components of supply, and this particular slide explains you what are the inclusions and what are the exclusions of the aggregate turnover. We are going to see an example also to compute the aggregate turnover. First, let us understand the aggregate turnover includes what? It includes the aggregate value of all taxable supplies, excluding the value of inward supplies on which the tax is payable by a person on a reverse charge basis. It includes the exempt supplies. It includes export of goods or services or both, and interstate supplies of persons having the same permanent account number to be computed on an all India basis. However, the aggregate value excludes the central tax, the state tax, the union territory tax, the integrated tax, as well as the GST compensation cess. So this is a very clear formula for computing the aggregate value, and on the basis of which we understand the threshold limit. Now let us understand this aggregate turnover by a simple example. Say Mr. Saha from Karnataka. He is a taxable person and he has intrastate supplies of 9,000, interstate supplies of 9 lakhs and 6 lakhs. His value of exports are rupees 2 lakhs and his exempt supplies are rupees 4 lakhs. So when we add up all this together, the value of aggregate turnover comes out to be 21,000. So in the previous slide, remember, does not include the central tax, state tax, union territories, integrated GST, GST compensation. For the purpose of understanding, the computation is kept very simple and has only the inclusions and basis of which, when we add up all together, we get the aggregate turnover. The next important terminology is the adjudicating authority. Any authority appointed or authorized to pass any order or decision under the CGST Act would be called as adjudicating authority. Every adjudicating authority shall have the same powers of a civil court, which are conferred on the appellate tribunal. It can deal with the complaint as expeditiously as possible and should settle the dispute within 1 year from the date of a receipt of the complaint. Adjudicating authority does not include the Central Board of Excise and Customs, the Revisionary Authority, the Authority for Advance Rulings, the Appellate Authority for Advance Rulings, the Appellate Authority, as well as the Appellate Tribunal. Next important terminology is of agent. Agent is a person including a factor, broker, commission agent, Del Crater agent, auctioneer, or any other mercantile agent by whatever name called, who carries on the business of supply of receipt of goods or services or both on behalf of another. Business, we have seen transactions should happen in furtherance of the business. So what does the term business means? The term business includes various things. And what are these various things? Can be any trade, commerce, manufacture, profession, vocation, adventure, wager, or any other similar activity, whether or not it is for a pecuniary benefit. It includes any activity or transaction in connection with or incidental or ancillary to subclause A. Business includes any activity or transaction in the nature of subclause A, whether or not there is a volume, frequency, continuity, or regularity of such transaction. Business also includes supply or acquisition of goods, including the capital goods and services in connection with commencement or closure of business. Business also includes provision by a club, association, society, or any such body for a subscription or any other consideration of the facilities or benefits to its members. Admission for consideration of persons to any premises. Business also includes services supplied by a person as the holder of an office which has been accepted by him in the course or furtherance of his trade, profession, or vocation. Business also includes services provided by a race club by way of a totalizer or license to bookmaker in such club. Any activity or transaction undertaken by the central government, state government, or any local authority in which they are engaged as public authorities would also be considered as a business. So this business definition has very specific inclusions. Next, we move on to understand what is a place of business. A place of business is a place from where the business is ordinarily carried on, and it also includes a warehouse, a godown, or any other place where a taxable person stores his goods, supplies, or receives goods or services, or both. A place of business can also be a place where a taxable person maintains his books of accounts. A place of business can also be a place where a taxable person is engaged in the business through an agent by whatever name called. Goods, we have already seen in Unit 1, it includes every kind of movable property other than money and securities. However, it includes actionable claims, growing crops, grass, and things attached to or forming part of the land which are agreed to be severed before supply or under a contract of supply. Here we are going to see the definition of capital goods. Capital goods has specific requirements to fulfill. The value which is capitalized in the books of accounts of the person claiming the input tax credit and which are used or intend to be used in the course or furtherance of business. Certain provisions related with capital goods needs to be noted. Credit of input tax will not be available on capital goods used exclusively for effecting exempt supplies. Credit of input tax will not be available on capital goods used exclusively for non-business personal activities. Credit of input tax will be available in totality where capital goods have been used for effecting taxable supplies and business activity without any restrictions. After seeing the definition of goods and capital goods, let us understand what is export of goods. Export of goods means taking goods out of India to a place outside India. Export of goods and services are zero rated. We have seen this before. GST is not payable on amount of export of goods and services, but still input tax credit is available. Export of services means a supply of any service. The supplier of services is located in India. The recipient of services is located outside India. The place of supply of service is outside India. The payment for services has been received by the supplier of service in convertible foreign exchange. So these provisions have to be complied with for considering a supply as an export. So if we have understood what is export, what are deemed exports? Supply of goods against international competitive bidding or power project from which the power supply has been tied up through tariff based competitive bidding, or to a power project awarded to a developer through the tariff based competitive bidding, can be considered as a deemed export. Supply of goods and services to the United Nations or an international organization for their official use or supply to projects can be considered as a deemed export. Another kinds of supply can also be considered as deemed exports, such as supply of goods and service for use of foreign diplomatic missions or consular missions or carrier counseling offices or diplomatic agents. Supplies made for setting up of solar power generation projects or facilities can also be considered as deemed exports. Now it's time to understand what is import of goods. Import of goods as bringing commodities from overseas to India, exactly opposite of exports. Import of services means the supply of any services where the supplier of service is located outside India, the recipient of service is located in India, and the place of supply of service is in India. And we have already seen all imports are considered as interstate supplies, and hence IGST will be applicable on all imported goods and services along with the customs duties. Having understood what are goods, capital goods, export of goods, now let us understand what are services. Anything other than goods, money and securities would be considered as services. and it includes activities relating to the use of money or its conversion by cash or by any other method to another form for which a separate consideration is charged. We have seen taxes paid by a natural person or by a artificial person who takes birth because of the legal provisions. When we talk in terms of a person, we require a clear-cut definition which includes both a natural person as well as an artificial person. So a person includes an individual, an Hindu undivided family, a company, a firm, an association of person or body of individuals, whether incorporated or not in India or outside India, any corporation established under any central act, state act or provincial act, or a government company. So it includes almost all types of entities, both natural as well as artificial persons, under the definition of a person. It also includes any body, corporate, incorporated under the laws of a country outside India, and corporate society registered under any law relating to corporate societies, a local authority, a central or state government, a society, a trust, and every artificial juridical person not falling within any of the above. So nothing is left out. Anything other than whatever mentioned from point number 1 to 12 can also get included on the basis of point number 13. Once we know what is a person, now let us understand who is a taxable person. A taxable person is a person who is registered or liable to be registered under section 22 or 24 of the GST Act. Every supplier whose aggregate turnover in a financial year exceeds 20 lakhs or 10 lakhs, as the case may be, is required to register under the GST in the state or union territory from where he supplies the goods and services or both. In case of a person who is engaged in exclusive supply of goods, the limit of 20 lakhs has been increased to rupees 40 lakhs with effect from 1st of April 2019. Next important entity is a casual taxable person. Who is a casual taxable person? A person who occasionally undertakes transactions involving supply of goods or services or both in the course or furtherance of business, whether as a principal agent or in any other capacity in a state or union territory where he has no fixed place of business. So this important requirement, no fixed place of business, will attract the definition of casual taxable person. Every casual taxable person has to mandatorily register under goods and service tax irrespective of their turnover limit. So this is the second important provision related with casual taxable person. Certificate of registration issued to a casual taxable person will be valid for a period of 90 days. The casual taxable person is required to make an advance deposit of tax in an amount equivalent to the estimated tax liability for the period for which the registration is sought. And the amount deposited will get subsequently adjusted against the liability. So if a person is considered as casual taxable person, then these are the provisions that person need to comply with. Just like a casual taxable person, we also have a clear-cut description of a non-resident taxable person. So who is a non-resident taxable person? Any person who occasionally undertakes transactions involving supply of goods or services or both, whether as principal or agent or in any other capacity, but who has no fixed place of business or residence in India will be considered as a non-taxable person. A non-resident taxable person needs to apply for registration at least 5 days prior to the commencement of business. A non-resident taxable person applying for registration as a non-resident taxable will be given a temporary reference number electronically by the GST Common Portal for making an advance deposit of tax in his electronic cash ledger, and an acknowledgement will also be issued thereafter. A A non-resident taxable person is required to make an advance deposit of tax in an amount equivalent to the estimated tax liability of such person for a period for which registration is sought. The advance tax will get credited into the electronic cash ledger and eventually get adjusted against the actual tax liability at the time of return filing, just like the casual taxable person. Now let us look at who is a supplier. A supplier in relation to any goods or services or both shall mean the person supplying the said goods or services or both, and shall include any agent acting as such on behalf of such supplier in relation to the goods or services or both supplied. What is a supply? Now, this definition is very important because supply includes so many other things. Supply of goods or services or both is defined as a sale, as a transfer, as a barter, as an exchange, as a license, as a rental, as a lease or disposal made or agreed to be made for a consideration by a person in the course or furtherance of business. So supply includes so many things like sale, transfer, barter, exchange, license, rental, lease, and even disposal. Each of these terms has its own meaning. Let us look at it one by one. What is a sale? A sale means a sale of goods made within the state for cash or deferred payment or other valuable consideration, but does not include a mortgage, hypothecation, charge or a pledge. For example, mortgage, hypothecation, charge or a pledge is not supply, and hence no GST would be levied. What is a transfer? Ownership may not be transferred, but the right in the goods is transferred. Exactly opposite of sale. In a sale, an ownership can be transferred. However, in a transfer, ownership may not be transferred, but the right in the goods is transferred. For example, Mr. A is the owner of Xerox machine. He transferred the right to operate a Xerox machine to Mr. B for a consideration, say rupees 10,000 per month for 4 month period. This can be a perfect example of a transfer because there is a transfer of a right to operate the Xerox machine. Hence, ownership of a machine is not transferred, but the right in the machine is transferred, and hence this can account to a sale. It is a supply of service and hence GST can be levied. The third term used in the definition of supply, barter. Barter simply means exchange of goods and productive service for some other goods and productive service, but without the use of money. It is just exchange of one thing for another. For example, Mr. C, a practicing cost accountant, provided service to Mr. A Limited, who is a dealer of laptops. Can be any service, maybe costing, maybe return filing. In return, Messrs. A Limited given to Mr. C two laptops. Here there is no money given, but laptops given in exchange for the services provided by Mr. C. A two-way supply takes place. Mr. C is making a taxable supply of service and Mrs. A Limited is making taxable supply of goods, and hence this is a supply and GST would be payable even though this is a barter transaction. Thank you.